TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Remembering Doris Granny D. Haddock. This is the second part of a one-hour tribute to Doris Granny D. Haddock. She gained national attention when she walked across America in her 90th year to inspire passion in removing money from politics. For almost a year, she trained walking 10 miles a day. After joining the Rose Bowl parade in Pasadena on January 1, 1999, she simply kept going when the parade ended. Her plan was to speak to as many people as possible and gather signatures for campaign finance reform. At a time when more money is spent on elections than ever before, it's good to remember her for her eloquence, humor, and steadfastness against seemingly insurmountable odds. Granny D had no support staff or funds other than her Social Security, so she decided to walk as a pilgrim, hoping to be given food and shelter from people along the way. One of her first helpers was Dennis Burke. He had received an email that a great-grandmother was about to traverse the Mojave Desert and would surely die since she had no support vehicle to provide her shade at rest stops and extra water. Dennis became one of her many helpers and stayed connected past the 14-month walk. He co-authored her book, Walking Across America in My 90th Year. Granny D was not a political novice. In 1960, she and her husband saved an Inuit fishing village when they successfully campaigned to ban hydrogen bomb testing in Alaska. But her campaign finance work had been local to New Hampshire and was not known nationally. However, as she started walking and speaking along the way, the accounts of her wisdom, passion, and humor spread. Author and broadcaster Jim Hightower heard about her walk early on and had her on his radio show every Friday. He was asked whether he thought her walk had an effect.
It did have an effect. It riveted public's attention not only on the problem. Most people know that our Congress and the White House and our state legislators also have largely been bought. They don't belong to us anymore. They belong to the moneyed interests, and they're the ones who get the governmental benefits. So they know generally of the problem. But what she did was to give them a sense that, well, maybe we could do something about it. And she was the leading organizing spark behind the McCain-Feingold legislation in Washington that did pass.
She is just fabulous. She's one of those people, she's just good clear through. I think everybody who, you know, works at trying to make it a better world gets discouraged and feels sorry for themselves and thinks they need a break. And then you look at Doris Haddock and you think, I'm feeling sorry for myself. This is ridiculous. Let's get back to work here, team. She does that for you without ever putting you down or making, I mean, she thinks we're all wonderful. We don't do one-tenth as much as she does. It's not just who she is at age 93, but it's who she's been all of her life. To see that clearly and to be that indefatigable, to have a sense of mischief and joy, I mean, she's really wonderful.
That was the late Molly Ivins, syndicated columnist. Here's Granny D with Dennis Burke.
The coverage in the local papers was tremendous. Everywhere I went, I was front page.
The national press, while it was never over the top, started to build. Charlie Gibson at Good Morning America would call in every couple of weeks and do an on the road interview, NPR. So the notice began to build. And as that continued, we saw attitudes changing in terms of campaign finance reform. It, in fact, her walk generated hundreds of thousands of messages to Congress. The staff of Senator McCain and the staff of Senator Feingold and Marty Meehan and Chris Shays in the House could see it, you know, when Doris was on Good Morning America or NPR, all of a sudden the Capitol switchboards would light up. And so that's their rough guess of what happened. And it did make a difference.
Everybody on the highway now were aware of who it was, and they would roll down the window, and I could get a cacophony going among the trucks by pumping my elbow. Then they'd yell at each other and say, "There's Granny, there's Granny," and somebody would say, "Who the hell is that?" And they said, "That's the old lady walking across the country campaign finance reform. Haven't you ever heard of her?"
You heard in part one of this program two very moving speeches that Granny D gave along the way. Now I'm fast-forwarding through 14 months of walking. Granny D is approaching Washington, D.C., but the weather turned very ugly. A blizzard buried the banks of the road. Dennis Burke.
And when we ran out of road at the top of the Appalachians coming out of Maryland, in the last 140 miles or so into Washington, D.C., it was the worst snowstorm in years, and the roads were just impassable for the walker. So she sent for old cross-country skis, and she went down the towpath of the C&O Canal. And she cross-country skied for over 100 miles to make her dates in Washington.
She did make it on time on her skis and walked towards the Capitol with a large group that included Jim Hightower and the singer David Crosby. As they approached the Capitol office buildings, some windows opened and secretaries held handmade signs, "Go, Granny, go." And as the group rounded the last corner, over 2,000 people were waiting, including a good many members of Congress. And here's part of what Granny D said while standing on the Capitol steps.
"The messages are many, written with old and young hands of every color, and yet the messages are the same. They are this: shame on those who raise untold millions of dollars in exchange for public policy. Shame on you, senators and congressmen, who have turned this headquarters of a great and self-governing people into a bawdy house. Time for this shame is ending. The American people see it and have decided against it. Our brooms are ballots and we come a-sweeping. We will visit every state where anti-reform senators are up for election and bring with us the long lists of your corruption, and I will be with them. You will try to buy your way out of it with expensive advertisements, but we will take such spending as further proof of your corruption. For Americans pay $10 in extra taxes for each dollar you receive for your campaigns from special interests. While we are here to speak frankly to our representatives, let us also speak frankly to ourselves. Along my walk, I have seen an America that is losing the time and the energy for self-governance. The problems we see in Washington are problems that have been sucked into a vacuum of our own making. It is not enough for us to elect someone, give them a slim list of ideas, and send them off to represent us. If we do not keep these boys and girls busy, they will always get into trouble. We must energize our communities to better see our problems, better plan their happy futures, and these plans must form the basis of our instructions to our elected representatives. This is the responsibility of every adult American, from native to newcomer, and from young worker to the long retired. If we are hypnotized by television and overwrought by life on a corporate consumer treadmill, let us snap out of it and regain our lives as a free, calm, fearless, outspoken people who have time for each other and our communities. let us pass election reforms and anti-corruption measures in our towns and cities and states, winning the reform wars where they are winnable, changing the national weather on this subject until the winds blow even through these columns. Now, senators, back to you. If I have offended you speaking this way on your front steps, that is as it should be. You have offended America, and you have dishonored the best things it stands for. Take your wounded pride, get off your backs and onto your feet, and go across the street to clean your rooms. You have somewhere on your desks, under the love letters from your greedy friends and co-conspirators against representative democracy, a modest bill against soft money. Pass it. Then show that you are clever lads by devising new ways for a great people to talk to one another again without the necessity of great wealth. If you cannot do that, then get out of the way. Go home to some other corruption, less harmful to a great nation. We have millions of people more worthy of these fine offices. So here we are, senators, at your doorstep. We, the people. How did you dare think we do not care about our country? The people of our nation do care. They have told me. They laugh with disgust about you on the beaches of California. In Toya, Texas, they pray for deliverance from your corruption. In Little Rock, Arkansas, they understand in anger how you undermine their best dreams for our society. And in Memphis and in Louisville and in Chillicothe and Clarksburg, through Pennsylvania and Maryland and into this city today, the people see you for what you have become, and they are prepared to see you another way. Boarding the train at the great train station down the street, they are ready for real leaders, unselfish and principled leaders who will prove their worth by voting for meaningful campaign finance reform this year. The time has come, senators, for reform or for some new senators. Tell us which it will be, and then we will go vote. In the name of the people who have sent me along to you, and the name of the generations before who have sacrificed so much for the sanctity of our free institutions and who stand with us in spirit today, I make this demand.
Doris Granny D. Haddock, giving the culminating speech of her 14 months, 3,200-mile walk across America. She was so happy to be home again, with her friends, books, and her old chair. But she did not retire. She went back to Washington and was arrested for reading the Declaration of Independence in the Capitol Rotunda. Only 5 weeks after returning from her epic journey, she proudly ended up in jail.
She did some extraordinary things even after her walk in terms of walking vigils, 24-hour vigils around the Capitol buildings and stuff like that. And because she did that, and because it was freezing out there, and because she wasn't getting enough rest, there were members of the Senate staff who would make appointments so with their senators, you know, so she could get out of the freezing rain. Her caring made them care. She met with over half of the Senate and met with probably over 100 members of the House during those days.
It took another 2 years for the McCain-Feingold Reform Act to pass. It banned unrestricted donations made directly to political parties and set limits on the advertising that unions, corporations, and nonprofit organizations can engage in. Granny D is credited for having garnered much of the support. Even then, age 92, Granny D did not retire. She always felt that McCain-Feingold was just a small step towards real campaign finance reform, which in her opinion had to include public funding of all campaigns and free advertising in the media. She was in the middle of a 23,000-mile trip, this time by car, for voter registration, when she heard that the presumed Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate from New Hampshire dropped out of the race just days before the filing deadline. At age 94, Granny D decided to jump into the fray against the Republican incumbent, Senator Judd Gregg. She captured an impressive 34% of the vote. Amy Goodman had her on Democracy Now!
She was 94 years old at the time. She came into our firehouse studio. I began by asking her why she decided to run for the Senate.
Well, I was out on a trip trying to get the vote out. Only 50% of the people are voting, and we were doing the swing states and trying to talk to single women, because that's one of the big blobs that are not voting, and also African-American. And when we heard that candidate that was running against Greg had to stop. It was public that his manager left in the middle of the night with the money, and so he had to retire from it. And we had until 5:30 that evening to decide whether or not we would consider running. And we called Kathy Sullivan and asked her what she thought. She said, "I have tried to find people throughout the state and can't that will jump in at this late date." And I said, "Well, I hate to see him going without any competition at all. And did you think it might be possible for me to do it?" And she said, "Yes, go." And so I did.
So now you're running for Senate. You have been a long critic of campaigns in this country. You walk the country for campaign finance reform.
Right.
So how are you doing it?
It's taken a while to get a start together, but I feel I'm in very good shape now. I have three people from Kucinich's campaign. I have Joe Trippi from the Dean campaign, who is strategizing for me. I'm doing all right. I'm trying to run on individual contributions of small legal contributions on the, and I'm going to the web, as did Dr. Dean, and he did very well, and I think it's the way to go, and so I'm setting up a new order. The pundits are calling this a David and Goliath game, and they were also saying it's probably the most interesting campaign that's going on in the country, and that if I win, I could definitely tip the Senate, and I might be of importance when it came time to choose another Supreme Court member. And so a lot of people are rooting for me.
That was Granny D, interviewed on Democracy Now! During her 2004 campaign for Senate. One of the most moving speeches during her Senate campaign was the Manchester speech. She spoke across the canal from the shoe factory, where she had worked for 20 years.
This is a speech that I gave during my campaign in Manchester, New Hampshire, on September 8, 2004. My father ran a warehouse for a furniture company in Laconia, New Hampshire, where I was born and grew up. When I lived in Manchester, I worked 20 years at the B.B. Shoe Company across the canal from here. I will walk over there after this event. I have lived during a time when the American middle class grew strong because we had good jobs and good organizing and solidarity. I have lived to see a time when our middle class is being destroyed by trade policies and corporate agendas that are but barely short of a treason to our American dream. The folks in Washington on both sides of the aisle argue about how this loss of jobs might be stemmed. There are no serious proposals on the table. When members of Congress have an opportunity to vote on this measure or that, they tend to favor the special interests who helped finance their miserable careers. It is not humanly possible for our so-called representatives to represent us if they are taking money by the millions from corporations who do not have our interests at all in their plans or concerns. We are all smart enough to know this, and this knowledge is the oxygen and the cordwood of the American people's present smoldering discontent with Washington. The fact is, the American middle class cannot be asked to compete with the penny for our wage scales of emerging nations without destroying our nation and its democracy. For our democracy has always stood on the firm ground of the middle class. Congress may be part of our problem, it always is, but we also need to look at the evolving nature of corporations, particularly the multinational corporation. If you do not like the present size of our federal government, you really should understand that it has grown to keep a check on the rising scale of corporations, beginning with the effort to regulate the trusts and monopolies at the beginning of the 20th century. Wars grew the government further, particularly World War I and World War II. You might comment that the social programs of the New Deal were an expansion of great government, and you would be right. But those programs, for the most part, were a patching up of the damage done by big business and industrialization and its effect on the people. A nation of small, family-owned businesses, after all, hardly needs the same safety net as a country dominated by large industrial companies. So our government has grown as a check to the growth of corporations, at least in many respects. I mention this because the idea of reducing the scale of government is only possible if you reduce the scale of corporations. And that is what I am leading toward in this little talk. It is clear that the corporations were once chartered to serve our society are now destroying it in many ways. It is further clear that they have no national identity or national loyalty or national patriotism anymore. They are simply too big, and a distinction must once again be made between an international trading company and a manufacturing or retail company. And we must impose new requirements that companies not become so large and so tentacled that they no longer serve the communities that charter them. And if they are not chartered here, they are not welcome to do business here. Further, the stock exchange that have become casinos instead of facilitators of long-term investment must be reformed to reduce the short-term orientation of companies and investors. This kind of necessary fundamental change now critically needed to protect our nation's jobs and future cannot be expected from members of Congress who are happy to have their campaigns funded by the very special interests we would have them regulate. That is, of course, why I am running a thin campaign, taking no special interest PAC money from any group. While it makes it harder for me to win, it also puts me in the position of being the voter's only choice if they want real representation, and that advantage may outweigh the dollar imbalance.
That was an excerpt of Doris Granny D. Haddock's Senate campaign speech in Manchester, New Hampshire. Granny D. lived to see the gutting of McCain-Feingold by the Supreme Court decision in Citizens United. Amy Goodman, in a Democracy Now! Program on Granny D.'s death that occurred on March 9, 2010, quoted what Granny D. had said about the Supreme Court decision at her 100th birthday party.
"I guess the Supreme Court has burned down our little house, but truth be told, it was pretty drafty anyway. We had not really solved the problem of too much money in politics, not hardly. And now we have an opportunity to start clean and build a system of reforms that really will do the trick."
Amy Goodman quoting Doris Granny D. Haddock. That was a tribute to Granny D. and her 15 years of work for campaign finance reform, and an inspiration for those who will pick it up from here. Thanks to David Freudberg for sound clips of Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and Dennis Burke from his radio documentary, Catching Up with Granny D. And thanks to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Granny D.'s book, co-authored with Dennis Burke, is Walking Across America in My 90th Year. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information on how to order an audio CD of Remembering Doris Granny D. Haddock by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation or CD order keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.